welcome to everyone. Welcome to our guest, and my mom, always good to see you. I'm glad that she's able to visit with us and be a part of the assembly today. We do want to look into a couple dysfunctional individuals, as was mentioned. And you'd think that Rehoboam and Jeroboam were like twin brothers or something. You know, if I was a father and I had a couple sons, I named them, I might name them Rehoboam and Jeroboam. Kind of rhymes, you know, a little difference there. But knowing who Rehoboam is and Jeroboam, I would not name my sons their names. It's like, you know, kind of like a bad part of history. And speaking of history, I brought up my old Bible up here because in the front of Kings, it gives a list of kings. And there are 43 in total. The United Kingdom, of course, started out with Saul, and the people demanded a king. They wanted to be like the rest of the nations, which Yahweh didn't really appreciate, I don't think. But through their persistence, through Samuel, they were given a king. And Samuel was told, don't think that they're against you. They're speaking against me by doing all this. And they got a king. They got a bad king. And he's not listed as a good king. But King David was listed as a good king with the United Kingdom, and I'm speaking united with all 12 tribes together. And then Solomon. Now, Solomon was a good king in part, but there are some things that Solomon did which, you know, makes us question how good he was. But then the southern kings, there were some good kings: Asa, Jehoshaphat, Joash, Uzziah, Jotham, Hezekiah, in part Josiah. You know, they say no one's perfect, and we see some flaws in many of the individuals that we look at in Scripture. But there were 43 in total, 9 good, 34 bad. And so we could say Yahweh knows how to pick them, but they're for his purpose. And these examples are for our learning. Now, Rehoboam was the son of Solomon. And as the procession would go, the king, the son of the king would be in line to reign after the king's death. As in, you know, King David, his son Solomon took the reign. This would have been the case, but Yahweh had something else in mind. That is Jeroboam. And he was an Ephraimite, a servant of King Solomon. Solomon saw that he was very advantageous and a good steward and these type of things. So he had some things in mind for him, but Yahweh had some greater things in mind for him. Because once Yahweh had made known to Solomon what he was going to do with Jeroboam and not Rehoboam, it made Solomon quite angry, and he wanted to kill Jeroboam. So Jeroboam fled. Let's go into 1 Kings. Let's start reading some accounts with these kings. Rehoboam, of course, was given the southern kingdom by Yahweh. 1 Kings chapter 11, and starting in verse 1. We're going to be doing a bit of reading today because to give an overall view of these individuals, we really need to. 1 Kings 11 and verse 1. Now King Solomon loved many foreign women. Well, this is part of the problem that we see with Solomon. This is part of the problem we see with some men today. And power is the other issue, and money is the other issue, I think. But in First Kings 11, verse 1, it says, "Now King Solomon loved many foreign women, along with the daughter of Pharaoh, Moabite, Ammonite, Edomite, Sidon, and Hittite women." Verse 2, "From the nations concerning which Yahweh had said to the sons of Israel, 'You shall not associate with them, nor shall they associate with you, for they shall surely turn your heart away after their mighty ones.' And Solomon had held fast to these in love. He even built them temples for their pagan deities, which is just outrageous in our line of thinking, knowing what Yahweh expects of us. And to do something like that is just awful. But in verse 13, he had 700 wives, princesses, 300 concubines. His wives turned his heart away. For when Solomon was old, his wives turned his heart away after other mighty ones. And his heart was not wholly devoted to Yahweh. You know, what is the commandment for us, even in the New Testament, which is brought out from the Old Testament, but it's to love Yahweh with all of your strength, mind, heart, and being. That's the first and greatest. And then the second is like it, to love your neighbor as yourself. But his heart was not wholly devoted to Yahweh, and it really should have been. His heart, as the heart of David, his father had been. You know, David was known as a man after Yahweh's own heart. But even David had his issues and had sinned, and we just read of the outcome of his sin in part with his family. The sword never left his family. That was part of the punishment for his sin. So we don't really get away with anything. And he lost a child, and other things had happened. But verse 5, for Solomon went after Ashtaroth, the goddess of the Sidonians, and after Milcom, the detestable idol of the Ammonites. Solomon did what was evil in the sight of Yahweh. But for our reason, the list listed Solomon as good. But when we read things like this, he was not good. Solomon did what was evil in the sight of Yahweh and did not follow Yahweh fully, as David his father had done. Then Solomon built a high place for Chemosh, the detestable idol of Moab, on the mountain which is east of Jerusalem, and for Molech, the detestable idol of the sons of Ammon. Molech is one of the idols in which they sacrifice children. This has been done throughout society, even with the not even associated with these here. They do idol and children sacrifices and all that. But then Solomon built high places for these. Thus he did for all of his foreign wives who burned incense and sacrificed to their gods. Now Yahweh was angry with Solomon because his heart turned away from Yahweh, the Elohim of Israel, who had appeared to him twice. So not just once, but twice, and he still turned his heart away. But had commanded him concerning this thing that he should not go after other mighty ones, but he did not observe what Yahweh had commanded. So Yahweh said to Solomon, because you have done this, and because you have not kept my covenant, my statutes, which I have commanded you, I shall surely tear the kingdom from you and will give it to your servant. Well, the servant is Jeroboam. But verse 12, nevertheless, I will not in your days do this for the sake of your father David, but I will tear it out of the hand of your son, that is Rehoboam. And however, I will not tear away all the kingdom, but I will give one tribe to your son for the sake of my servant David and for the sake of Jerusalem, which I have chosen. So Solomon turns away from Yahweh due to foreign wives, which he loved. You know, let's go over to Deuteronomy. A lot of this could have been prevented if they had listened to the word of Yahweh and had done the word of Yahweh. What do I mean by that? Let's go over to Deuteronomy 17. And let me back up here to verse 16. Moreover, he shall not multiply horses for himself, speaking of the kings. Well, in verse 15, for example, you shall set a king over you whom Yahweh your Elohim chooses, one from among your countrymen. You shall set his king over yourselves. You shall not put a foreigner over yourselves who is not your countryman. Moreover, in verse 16, he shall not multiply horses for himself. Nor shall he cause the people to return to Egypt to multiply horses, since Yahweh has said to you, you shall not again return that way. Verse 17, he shall not multiply wives for himself, or else his heart will turn away, nor shall he greatly increase increase gold and silver, or silver and gold for himself. And now it shall come about when he sits on the throne of his kingdom, he shall write for himself a copy of this law on a scroll in the presence of the Levitical priest. And the reason for that is to get embedded, to understand it, to consider it, to meditate upon it, so that the things you're told not to do, you don't. And the things you're told to do, you do. And we can do this today by studying and going over these things morning and evening and throughout the day. But Solomon turned away from Yahweh. In fact, Solomon had some character issues. When he was building the temple, it took 7 years to build Yahweh's house. But then he built his house, and he made it like twice as large, and took 13 years to build his house. Not the wisest thing to do, I wouldn't think. You want to stay humble, and that's not one way you do it. But he was told by Yahweh that one of his servants would rule over Israel, and that a son would be given to one tribe of Judah for the sake of David, who had not turned his heart away. Let's go over to 1 Kings 11 and verse 28, the prophecy brought about by Ahijah that Jeroboam would be king over the northern 10 tribes. 1 Kings 11, verse 28. Now the man Jeroboam was a valiant warrior, and when Solomon saw that the young man was industrious, he appointed him over all his forced labor of the house of Joseph. It came about at that time when Jeroboam saw or went out of Jerusalem that the prophet Ahijah, the Shilonite, found him on the road. Now Ahijah had clothed himself with a new cloak, and both of them were alone in the field. And Ahijah took hold of the new cloak which was on him and tore it into 12 pieces. And he said to Jeroboam, "Take for yourself 10 pieces, for thus says Yahweh, the Elohim of Israel, behold, I will tear the kingdom out of the hand of Solomon and give you 10 tribes. But he will give one tribe for the sake of my servant David and for the sake of Jerusalem, the city for which I have chosen from all the tribes of Israel." Why did he do that? Well, for the sake of David, for the sake of Jerusalem, but also, I mean, we understand that through the tribe of Judah, the Messiah came, and that the Messiah will rule from Jerusalem, and in fact, his kingdom will have no end, but the epicenter will be from Jerusalem. Continuing here in verse 33, "Because they have forsaken me and have worshipped Ashtaroth, the goddess of Sidonians, Chemosh, the god of Moab, Milcom, the god of sons of Ammon, they have not walked in my ways, doing what is right in my sight, and observing my statutes, my ordinances, as his father David did." You know, we're looking in Genesis 26 and verse 5 today, because what we were studying, you know, Abraham kept his commandments, his ordinances, his statutes, all these things. It made him a man, a faithful man, and that's why he's listed in Hebrews chapter 11. He followed Yahweh wholeheartedly. But Solomon did not. "Nevertheless, I will not take the whole kingdom out of his hand, but I will make him ruler all the days of his life for the sake of my servant David, whom I chose, who observed my commandments and my statutes. And I will take the kingdom from his son's hand and give it to you, even 10 tribes. But to his son I will give one tribe, and my servant David may have a lamp always before me in Jerusalem, a city where I have chosen for myself to put my name. I will take you, and you shall reign over whatever you desire, and you shall be king over Israel. Then it will be that if you listen to all that I command you and walk in my ways and do what is right in my sight by observing my statutes, my commandments, as my servant David did, then I will be with you and build you an enduring house as I built for David, and I will give Israel to you. Thus I will afflict the descendants of David for this, but not always. Solomon sought, therefore, to put Jeroboam to death. But Jeroboam arose and fled to Egypt, to Shishak, king of Egypt, and he was in Egypt until the death of Solomon." I looked in into some commentaries on this because thinking about the 10 tribes and the southern tribes, there's 12 tribes altogether. But Keel and DeLitch, commentary in the Old Testament says, in reality, there were three tribes that fell to the kingdom of Judah, and only nine to the kingdom of Israel, Ephraim and Manasseh being reckoned as two tribes, since the tribe of Levi was not counted in the political classification. The kingdom of Judah included, beside the tribe of Judah, both the tribe of Benjamin and also the tribe of Simeon, the territory of which, according to Joshua 19, 1 through 9, was within the tribe territory of Judah and completely surrounded by it. On maps you look at today, it shows Simeon in the middle, is a basically a circle of properties there, cities and such that were given to the Simeon tribe, and Judah is all the way around that. So the Simeonites would have been obliged to immigrate or give up their tribal land altogether if they desired to attach themselves to the northern kingdom of Israel. Interesting. I mean, I don't want to go much further than that, but it's interesting to see that there probably were some changes, but we understand the northern tribes as being 10 tribes and southern tribes as being two. I do want to go back to Joshua. It pointed out Joshua 19. Joshua 19, verse 1. These are the territories by lot they were given. But it says, the second lot fell to Simeon, to the tribe of the sons of Simeon, according to their families, and their inheritance was in the midst of the inheritance of the sons of Judah. So just confirmation of what Keel and DeLitch had said. Now the kingdom of Israel divides essentially over labor and, you know, I'm assuming taxation. There's a request to ease all of this for the people. In 1 Kings 12 and verse 1, then Rehoboam went to Shechem, for all Israel had come to Shechem to make him king. Now when Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, heard of it, he was living in Egypt, for he was yet in Egypt, where he had fled from the presence of King Solomon. Then they sent and called him, and Jeroboam and all the assembly of Israel came and spoke to Rehoboam, saying, your father made our yoke hard. Now therefore lighten the hard service of your father and his heavy yoke, which he put on us, and we will serve you. And then he said to them, depart for 3 days and return to me. So the people departed. King Rehoboam consulted with the elders who had served his father Solomon while he was still alive. Well, that was wise of him to do, saying, how do you counsel me to answer this people? And then they spoke to him, saying, well, if you will be a servant, which is really what a king should be, to this people today, and will serve them and grant them their petition and speak good words to them, then they will be your servants forever. Was Rehoboam a wise man? Or was he a bit of a Nabal? You know, he forsook the counsel. Nabal is Hebrew for fool. For our guest, you may not know that. But he forsook the counsel of the elders, which they had given him, and consulted with the young men. Oh yeah, the young crowd, they know what's happening. They're hip. And these were friends. They grew up with him. And they served him, so he had some clout over them. Anyway, it says, so he said to them, what counsel do you give that we may answer this people who have spoken to me, saying, lighten the yoke which your father put on us? And the young men who grew up with him spoke to him, saying, well, thus you shall say to the people who spoke to you, saying, your father made our yoke heavy, and now you make it lighter for us. But you shall speak to them, my little finger is thicker than your father's loins. Whereas my father loaded you with a heavy yoke, I will add to your yoke. My father disciplined you with whips, but I will discipline you with scorpions. How do you think that went over? Then Jeroboam and all the people came to Rehoboam on the third day of the king, as the king directed, saying, "Return to me on the third day." And the king answered the people harshly, for he forsook the advice of the elders, the wise men, we should say, which they had given him. You know, those counselors. He should have taken that advice. Should have taken it. He spoke to them according to the advice of the young men, saying, "My father made your yoke heavy, but I will add to your yoke. My father disciplined you with whips, but I will discipline you with scorpions." So the king did not listen to the people, for it was a turn of events from Yahweh. So he allowed this, just like he hardened the heart of Pharaoh. Well, he didn't actually harden it. I mean, Pharaoh hardened his own heart, but Yahweh allowed circumstances to come about which allowed that to be said. But he might establish his word that Yahweh spoke through Ahijah, the Shilonite, to Jeroboam, the son of Nebat. So King Rehoboam acts foolishly by rejecting wise counsel from the elders, but it was Yahweh's will that the northern kingdom be placed in Jeroboam's hands, but the southern in Rehoboam's hands, as spoken by, spoken to Solomon by Yahweh. 1 Kings 12, let's go on to verse 16. Rehoboam flees Jerusalem after he hears a servant was stoned to death, who was a taskmaster, master over forced labor. Yahweh warns against fighting the northern tribes. Verse 16, when all Israel saw that the king did not listen to them, the people answered the king, saying, "What portion do we have in David? We have no inheritance in the son of Jesse. To your tents, O Israel. Now look after your own house, David." So Israel departed to their tents. But as for the sons of Israel who lived in the cities of Judah, Rehoboam reigned over them. And then King Rehoboam sent Adoram, who was over the forced labor, and all Israel stoned him to death. And King Rehoboam made haste to mount his chariot to flee to Jerusalem. Why? Because he thought he was next. So Israel had been in rebellion against the house of David to this day. It came about when all Israel heard that Jeroboam had returned, they sent and called him to the assembly and made him king over all Israel, as Yahweh's will. None but the tribe of Judah followed the house of David. And of course, Simeon and Benjamin would have been there, but maybe Simeon moved, not sure. Verse 21, now when Rehoboam had come to Jerusalem, he assembled all the house of Judah and the tribe of Benjamin. So Simeon isn't actually mentioned here, just house of Judah and Benjamin. 180,000 chosen men who were warriors to fight against the house of Israel to restore the kingdom to Rehoboam, the son of Solomon. But the word of Yahweh came to Shemaiah, the man of Elohim, saying, "Speak to Rehoboam, the son of Solomon, king of Judah, and to all house of Judah and Benjamin, and to the house of the people, saying, thus says Yahweh, you must not go up and fight against your relatives, the sons of Israel. Return every man to his house, for this thing has come from me." So they listen. They listened to the word of Yahweh and returned and went their way to the word, according to the word of Yahweh. Now that's to Rehoboam's and to Judah's benefit, and Benjamin as well. And so that was a good thing out of all this. I mean, but we'll also see that they had a type of repentance towards the end, which is interesting. We know of Manasseh, as wicked as he was, he also repented at the end, and there are others. So all of these are lessons. Let's go into verse 25. We read about Jeroboam's apostasy and idolatry. So I read a little bit there about Rehoboam, but in verse 25, 1 Kings 12, then Jeroboam built Shechem in the hill country of Ephraim, and lived there, and he went out from there and built Penuel. Jeroboam said in his heart, now the kingdom will return to the house of David. If this people will go up and offer sacrifices in the house of Yahweh at Jerusalem, then the heart of this people will return to their master, even to Rehoboam, king of Judah, and they will kill me and return to Rehoboam, king of Judah. Whatever happened to trusting in Yahweh? Things can go bad if you don't. Verse 28, so the king consulted and made two golden calves. And he said to them, is it too much for you to go up to Jerusalem? Behold your gods, O Israel, that brought you out of the land of Egypt. So he must have recognized the account from Exodus 32. And he said to one, he set one in Bethel and the other he put in Dan. Now this saying became a sin, no doubt, for the people who went and to worship before this one as far as Dan. You know, why would that become a sin? Well, there's a number of reasons, but let's go to Deuteronomy 12. Hold your place here because we're going to come right back. Deuteronomy 12, verse 28, it says, be careful to listen to all these words which I command you, so that you may dwell, it may be well with you and your sons forever after you. For you will be doing what is good and right in the sight of Yahweh your Elohim. So how do we know what is right and good in the sight of Elohim? By his word. And this was to be written down in the front of the Levites. The kings were to write this word down. It says, be careful. You know, listen to all these words. Verse 29, when Yahweh your Elohim cuts you off before the nations which you're going into dispossess, and you dispossess them and dwell in their land, beware that you are not ensnared to follow them after they are destroyed before you, and that you do not inquire after their mighty ones, saying, well, how do these nations serve their mighty ones, that I may do so likewise? Like the calf, the golden calf, that looks pretty. Let's set that up and do that. Let's worship Yahweh that way. Verse 31, you shall not behave thus towards Yahweh or Elohim, for every abominable act which Yahweh hates they have done for their mighty ones, like sacrificing children. They even burnt their sons and daughters in the fire to their mighty ones. In verse 32, this reads similar to what we find in Revelation. Whatever I command you, you shall be careful to do, and you shall not add to nor take away from it. Revelation says you don't add to or take away from that book either. But basically, the entire Bible is for our own good, and you shouldn't add to or take away. So we have to look at things in context, make sure that we're interpreting correctly what it says. Let's go back to 1 Kings 12. You know, Proverbs 3 and verse 5 says, trust in Yahweh with all of your heart. Do not lean on your own understanding. Jeroboam is failing at this. He sets this golden idol up in Bethel, the other in Dan. In verse 31, he made houses on the high places and made priests from among all the people who were not of the sons of Levi, because they were in the southern territory. They weren't up there. So picked whomever and made them priests. Jeroboam instituted a feast on the eighth month, on the 15th day of the month, like the feast which is in Judah. Well, you go back to Leviticus 23, what feast is in the eighth month? Well, you have, and it starts on the 15th. Well, you have the Feast of Tabernacles. So that would be, I think, maybe what this is referencing. But this is only one day. Went up to the altar, thus he did in Bethel, sacrificing to the calves which he had made. He stationed in Bethel the priests of the high places which he had made. Then he went up to the altar which he had made in Bethel on the 15th day of the eighth month, even the month which he had devised in his own heart. He instituted a feast for the sons of Israel, went up to the altar to burn incense. So not only did he break Deuteronomy 12, 28 through 32 there. But he also basically, by setting up this false idol worship, but he set up a separate day. He's instituting substitutes. And this sort of thing has happened today. There are substitutes with things taken from paganism and used to worship the Father, but he says that's an abomination and that we're not to do it. And this you know, this Deuteronomy, and we'll talk a little bit more about this, but Deuteronomy is like a constitution for the kingdom. Now, the whole Torah is certainly to be held in honor and studied and to be, you know, put into action, because we see that being done by the Messiah himself, who is our example. But he quoted from the scripture, because he knew the scriptures and he knew that the people needed to pay attention. In fact, he says the Pharisees and the Sadducees, and you know, the ones that were not doing things right, he said, well, since they sat in the seat of Moses, do what they say, but just don't do what they do, because they don't do what they say. You know, Jeremiah 17:9 says, the heart is more deceitful than all else and is desperately sick. Who can understand it? And you see this in Rehoboam. You see this in Jeroboam. Amazing. Well, let's go back to Exodus 32. We're just seeing history repeat itself through this process. And it just makes me think that Jeroboam nor Rehoboam had read or written or even knew about them. They must have known, you know, the law of Moses, which was the law of Yahweh, was to be walked in, but they sure did not walk in them. Exodus 32 talks about the golden calf. Let's go down to verse 4. He made, took this from the people, that is the gold and gold earrings and all these things. He took this from their hand, fashioned it with a graven tool, and he made it into a golden calf. And they said, this is our Elohim, O Israel, who brought you out of the land of Egypt. Now when Aaron saw this, he built an altar before it. And Aaron made a proclamation and said, tomorrow shall be a feast to Yahweh. Using this golden calf as a feast to Yahweh. And we think that's bad, and it is bad. But people are taking things like Easter bunnies and eggs and Santa Clauses and raising those things up and saying, praise the Lord, praise his name, but they're not using his name. They're putting substitutes, and they're falsifying days, just like Jeroboam. I mean, this is serious business, that Yahweh has said, don't do these things, and those that do them, They're written down for our, you know, our example of what not to do. And regrettably, there's a lot of examples of this sort of thing going on in the past. But we see history repeating itself even today. Verse 8 of Exodus 32. Look, they have quickly turned aside from the way which I commanded them. They have made for themselves a molten calf, and have worshipped it, and have sacrificed it, and said, this is your Elohim, O Israel, who brought you out of the land of Egypt. It's just amazing to be able to read that as an account of something that has happened. The Bible is not trying to sugarcoat anything. It's saying how it was, what had happened, and you know, how we're today to avoid such things. Some people actually think, well, some of the scholars, I should say, have mentioned October 31st, you know, Halloween. They're placing Jeroboam's feast with Halloween, because that's the only they can think of that's in October. So my conclusion is they did not write down in the law for themselves, because how could they write the law and then disobey it so badly? But because of his fear of losing power, he implements a plan to have this alternative day of worship, that people can participate in. In doing so, he chooses priests other than those of the Levitical priest, which were chosen as Yahweh's priest. He also chose to not, he chose a not designated place for worship by Yahweh, but rather his own in Bethel and Daniel, or Dan, I should say. So this was a different religion, a substitute, a counterfeit, a replacement, and it didn't end well. 1 Kings 13, starting in verse 1. Now behold, there came a man of Elohim from Judah to Bethel by the word of Yahweh while Jeroboam was standing by the altar to burn incense. And he cried against the altar by the word of Yahweh and said, O altar, altar, thus says Yahweh, behold, a son will be born to the house of David, Josiah by name, and on you he shall sacrifice the priest of the high places who burn incense on you. Then human bones shall be burned on you. That's how it will be done, because Josiah is way past this time period. So the only way to do this is to take their bones, take them out of the graves, and then burn them. And that's what has happened. Then he gave a sign that same day, saying, this is a sign which Yahweh has spoken. Behold, the altar shall be split apart, and the ashes which are on it shall be poured out. Now when the king heard the saying of the man of Elohim, which he cried against the altar in Bethel, Jeroboam stretched out his hand from the altar, saying, seize him. He wasn't going to have anything of this, but his hand which he stretched out against him dried up, withered up instantly, so that he could not draw it back even to himself. The altar also was split apart, and the ashes also poured out from the altar, according to the sign which the man of Elohim had given by the word of Yahweh. And the king said to the man of Elohim, please entreat Yahweh, your Elohim. He got that right, your Elohim. And pray for me, that my hand may be restored unto me. So the man of Elohim entreated Yahweh, and the king's hand was restored to him, and it became as it was before. Then the king said to the man of Elohim, come home with me and refresh yourself, and I will give you a reward. But the man of Elohim said, if you were to give me half of your house, now this is not like Balaam, you know, wanting to get something, but he said, if you were to give me half of your house, I would not go up with you, nor would I eat bread nor drink water from its place. For so it was commanded to me by the word of Yahweh, saying, you shall eat no bread, drink, nor drink water, nor return by the way which you came. And so he went another way and did not return by the way which he had came to Bethel. Now you can read the rest of that on your own time. We can read that another time. But basically, he was lied to by another prophet, so-called prophet. I don't know what kind of prophet lies, but it'd be a false prophet in my estimation. Let's go down to verse 33. But after this event, Jeroboam did not return from all of his evil ways, but again he made priests of the high places and among the peoples, any who would, he ordained to be priests of the high places. I'm assuming there would have been a few that would, no, thank you. Don't want to be a part of that. But, you know, typically, as the king goes, the people go as well. And that's how it went here. But this event became sin to the house of Jeroboam, even to blot it out and destroy it from off the face of the earth. So not good. And it did happen. 2 Kings 23. Starting in verse 4. Now this is under Josiah, became king, and the king commanded Hilkiah, the high priest of the priests of the second order, and the doorkeepers to bring out of the temple of Yahweh, all the vessels that were made for Baal, Asherah, and all. You know, so this was other kings misbehaving and doing other things, I mean, centuries after Jeroboam. But it says, and all the hosts of heaven, he burned them outside Jerusalem in the fields of Kidron, buried, carried their ashes to Bethel. He did away with the idolatrous priest whom the kings of Judah had appointed to burn incense in the high places of the cities of Judah and the surrounding areas of Jerusalem. Also those who burn incense to Baal, to the sun and the moon and the constellations, to all the hosts of heaven. Of course, they weren't to do those things, and they did them anyway. But verse 6, he brought out the Asherah from the house of Yahweh outside Jerusalem to the brook Kidron and burned it, brook Kidron, and ground it to dust and threw its dust on the graves of the common people. He also broke down the houses of the male cult prostitutes which are in the house of Yahweh. I mean, this is just vile. It got really bad under some of these kings. And where women were weaving hangings of the Asherah. And of course, we even find today images of Yahweh being associated with Asherah as a cohort, like a wife. And, you know, some will look at those archaeological finds and go, see, Yahweh's just a pagan deed. No, the people turned pagan and associated other pagan things with Yahweh. That's how it went. And that's what we need to understand. The things that Yahweh said, you know, not to do happen, and we have evidence of those things even today in the archaeological finds. But he broke down the houses of the male cult prostitutes, which were in the house of Yahweh. They were actually in the house of Yahweh, where the women were weaving hangings for Asherah. Then he brought all the priests from the cities of Judah, defiled the high places where the priests had burned incense from Geba to Beersheba, broke down the high places of the gates, which were at the entrance of the gates of Joshua, the governor of the city, which were at one of the left at the city gate. Verse 9, nevertheless, the priests of the high places did not go up to the altar of Yahweh in Jerusalem, and they ate unleavened bread among their brothers. Let's go down to verse 13, the high places which were before Jerusalem, which were on the right mount of destruction which Solomon the king of Israel built for Ashtoreth, and the abomination of the Sidians and the Chemosh, and the abomination of Moab, and for Milcom, the abomination of the sons of Ammon, the king defiled. He broke in pieces the sacred pillars, cut down the ashram, filled their places with human bones. Furthermore, the altar that was at Bethel in the high place, which Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, who made Israel sin, he made even that altar and the high place he broke down. Then he demolished its stones, ground them to dust, and burned the Asherah poles. You know, you can see these things even today in the court of the Roman Catholic over there in Rome, even here in the United States, Washington, D.C., there's a large Asherah, uncircumcised, edifice there. Verse 16, now when Joshua turned, he saw the graves that were there on the mountain, and he sent and took the bones from the graves and burned them on the altar, thus fulfilling 1 Kings 13:2. And he defiled it according to the word of Yahweh, which the man of Elohim proclaimed, who proclaimed these things. So these defilements were actually good because they were against the pagan ways and reforms that were made. And Josiah made a bunch of reforms. Chapter 22 and verse 8, we can back up to. Hilkiah the priest said to Stephan the scribe, I have found the book of the law in the house of Yahweh. So why was Josiah doing all these things? He found the book. And this book is thought to be by some as the Torah. Some think it's the book of Deuteronomy. Deuteronomy 31, for example. And I, if I could, I suppose I'd write down the whole book of the Torah, but certainly we can study it today. But Deuteronomy 31, but the command was for the kings to write down the book of the law. Deuteronomy 31, and starting in verse 25, it says, Moses commanded the Levites who carried the Ark of the Covenant of Yahweh, saying, take this book of the law and place it beside the Ark of the Covenant of Yahweh or Elohim, that it may remain there as a witness against you. And Deuteronomy is looked upon as basically a constitution for the kingdom, but really when you want to go into all the details, you want to include all the other books. But Deuteronomy 30 and verse 19 talks about the blessings and the curses which are given, and that we're to choose life and not the you know, the curses, but to have the blessings. In Deuteronomy 26, 1 through 39, I have to turn there, but you find these blessings and the curses. In Deuteronomy, you find a second witness to this in Deuteronomy 28, 1 through 68. There's also something else that's comparable, and that is you find the Ten Commandments in Exodus chapter 20, and then in Deuteronomy chapter 5, you find the Ten Commandments. So you almost have, with Deuteronomy, you have like a cliff notes or something along those lines. You have like a consolidation of the other books within one. And some think, well, that's the one that was on the side of the Ark. Others think the whole Torah was on the side. I don't know. It wasn't there. But I will say that it's important that these kings do what the word says, because Josiah evidently did that, because they found the book, evidently had been gone for some time. That would have been like the Dark Ages, because without instruction, good instruction, how are you supposed to live? So Josiah was a good king because he read the word and he did it. The reigns of the kings, let's go back to 1 Kings 14. First Kings 14:20. It talks about their reign. The time Jeroboam reigned was 22 years. He slept with his fathers. Go down to verse 21. Rehoboam was 41 years old when he became king. He reigned 17 years in Jerusalem, city which Yahweh had chosen from all the tribes of Israel, put his name there. In verse 25, it talks about, now it happened in the fifth year of a king Rehoboam that Shishak, the king of Egypt, came up against Jerusalem, took away the treasures of the house of Yahweh. You know, was Rehoboam, did he like all that gold? Was that what his, you know, focus was on? Because it all got taken away from him. It says he took everything. Took away the treasures, the house of Yahweh, the treasures of the king's house, took everything, even taking all the shields of gold which Solomon had made. 1 Kings 12, verses 8 through 14. He forsook the counsel of the elders which they had given him, consulted with the young men who grew up with him, served him. So he said to them, what counsel do you give me that we may answer this people? He was spoken to them, you know, lighten the yoke which the father put on us. The young men who grew up with him spoke to him, saying, thus you shall say to the people who spoke to you, saying, your father made our yoke heavy. Now make it light for us. But you shall speak to them, my little finger is thicker than my father's loins. Whereas my father loads you up with a heavy yoke, I will add to your yoke. My father discipline you with whips, but I will discipline you with scorpions. So higher taxation, more trouble. I think money was kind of a thing for Rehoboam in making that decision. But, you know, that's just my opinion. But you know, if something is, if you're putting something in between you and the Father of the universe, he can take it out of the way. And that appears to be what happened here. But you see further down in verse 30, there was war between Rehoboam and Jeroboam continuously. That's why I picked this image, and these two kings had at it throughout their reign. There was no peace. So the key outcomes of their reigns, constant war existed between the two, as recorded. And there was spiritual decline for all of Israel, since both kings failed to follow Yahweh's commandments, leading to instability and judgment. Lessons for today. Well, a lot of these things are written for our example. Let's go to 1 Corinthians 10 and 11. First Corinthians 10 and verse 11. Now these things happened to them as an example, that they were written down for our instruction, upon whom the ends of the ages have come. And it's really talking about, you know, coming out of Egypt and those type of things. But the whole history is for our good, to know it and to learn it so that we don't repeat it. But the biggest thing that we need to be paying attention to, and I, you know, through messages, I try to think about what is beneficial for us to hear, what is beneficial for you to receive. Well, we find in 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 21, "For you have been called for this purpose, since Messiah also suffered for you," going through difficulties and seeing history. You know, we can follow good examples, and here we find one in Messiah. "Messiah suffered for you, leaving you an example for you to follow in his footsteps, who committed no sin, nor was any deceit found in his mouth." So we know that the way is difficult, that leads to eternal life, but the main point I want to point out here is that the Messiah didn't sin. He set the right example for us. What we find in Rehoboam and Jeroboam is sin, 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 sin on top of sin. And it didn't work out for them. There was no peace. They suffered. The people suffered. It's just a lesson for us not to fall in their steps. So there's the danger of rejecting wise counsel. Rehoboam wrongly dismissed seasoned advisors, choosing instead to listen to young men, long-term friends who lacked insight into the country's needs. And as Proverbs 12:15 says, "The way of a fool is right in his own eyes, but a wise man listens to counsel." Modern leaders should seek advice from experienced individuals with broader perspectives and wisdom, rather than from their peers who share their own youthful and inexperienced views. The power of harsh words. Proverbs 15:1 says, "A gentle reply turns away anger, but a harsh word stirs up anger." Rehoboam's prideful reply, rather than addressing real issues, sparked rebellion. The people up and left. They weren't going to take it. In organizations, families, communities, how do you speak and how do you respond to concerns, influences, whether conflicts escalate or resolved? The corruption of ambition without integrity. Although Jeroboam had notable talents, such as energy, organization, leadership, he completely misused them. He employed his abilities to pursue personal gains, incite rebellion, promote irreligion and idolatry. Talent without righteous acts turns destructive. And so we should seek what is right and true. And well, where do we find that? In James 1, 5 through 6, it says, "If any one of you lacks wisdom, let him ask Elohim, who gives all generously and without reproach, and it will be given him. But he must ask in faith without any doubting, for the one who doubts is like the surf of the sea, driven and tossed by the wind. Unstable. Lessons for today: the consequences of spiritual compromise. Jeroboam's religion had a negative effect on others. His sins influenced them. His worship helped promote utter false worship. Leaders' spiritual choices influence entire communities. Someone who persistently refuses correction will ultimately suffer an irreversible downfall. Proverbs 29, 1 through 2 says, "A man who hardens his neck after much reproof will suddenly be broken beyond remedy." When the righteous increase, the people rejoice. But when a wicked man rules, the people groan. This happened with the people, and they were told what would happen. Because they were rejecting Yahweh and his ways, they wanted to be like the nations. And Yahweh told them, look, this is what's going to happen. They said, we don't care. Give us a king, you know. Well, another lesson is humility brings partial restoration. Let's go over to 2 Chronicles, because, you know, we have parallels, 1 Kings, 2 Kings, 1 Chronicles, 2 Chronicles. You'll find some of the same things we read today in Chronicles, repeated. But 2 Chronicles chapter 12, we do find the humbling of Rehoboam and those with him. It says, when the kingdom of Rehoboam was established and strong, and he and all of Israel with him forsook the law of Yahweh, and it came about in King Rehoboam's fifth year, because they had been unfaithful to Yahweh, that Shishak, king of Egypt, came up against Jerusalem with 1,200 chariots, 60,000 horsemen, and the people who came up with him from Egypt were without number, the Lubim, the Sukkim, the Ethiopians. He captured the fortified cities of Judah and came as far as Jerusalem. And then Shemaiah, the prophet, came to Rehoboam and the princes of Judah who had gathered at Jerusalem because of Shishak. And he said to them, thus says Yahweh, you have forsaken me. So I have also forsaken you to Shishak. So the princes of Israel and the king humbled themselves and said, Yahweh is righteous. Basically saying, we have sinned. Yahweh is right and true. Verse 7, when Yahweh saw that they humbled themselves, the word of Yahweh came to Shemaiah and said, saying, they have humbled themselves, so I will not destroy them, but I will grant them some measure of deliverance, and my wrath shall not be poured out on Jerusalem by means of Shishak, but they will become his slaves, so that they may learn the difference between my service and the service of the kingdoms of the countries. And so, just as Yahweh has at other times said, so that you may learn what is clean versus what is unclean, so that you may know what is right versus what is wrong, so that you know what is mercy compared to what is not mercy. But we find one of the worst kings, Manasseh, repenting as well in 2 Chronicles 33. That's a message for another time. I'm glad we went through this, because I didn't want you to think that Rehoboam and Jeroboam were just twin brothers that were named. Because, you know, if we don't look into these things, we don't know who these people are. But it's good to review and to look into these things and to know what not to do, as well as to know what to do. May Yahweh bless.